You're listening to Stateside. I'm Cynthia Canty. A decision to join Teach for America brought then 22-year-old Michelle Kuo to the Mississippi Delta. Her hope was to teach American history through Black literature. It was a far cry from growing up in West Michigan in the 1980s as the daughter of parents who'd emigrated from Taiwan. Michelle had a 15-year-old student named Patrick in her class. His sharp mind and his eagerness to learn and her desire to teach became the basis of a life-changing connection that was formed between the pair, a connection that overcame economic and social inequality. Michelle's new book, Reading with Patrick, tells us the story of this rewarding and challenging friendship. Michelle Kuo is with us now via Skype. It's so good to have you with us, Michelle.
I'm delighted to be here. I'm such a fan of Stateside, and it's an honor.
Well, thank you so much. Tell us what brought this high-achieving, studious West Michigan daughter of immigrants to this terribly poor town in Arkansas.
Oh, gosh. You know, when I was growing up, my parents were very immigrant parents. The most important thing for them was for me to get A's. I mean, they were the kind of parents where if you brought home an A minus, you were really afraid about what they would say. So I was really good at studying. And the unexpected joy for me was discovering books and reading. And that's what happened. I think I read so much literature, so much American history. And there's a way in which becoming a teacher and going to the rural South was my way of being a better American than the other Americans in my class, if that makes any sense. You read about these civil rights organizers, these college students from all over the country who are pouring into the South in the 1960s, and you think, oh, that's part of our history. Those are our heroes. And then by the time I'm a senior in college, I learn about how these areas where people used to pour into are totally forgotten and yet still segregated, still poor, still in need of dramatic change. And I think it's really interesting. My parents made me a very good disciple, and I transferred that intensity from studying to the world of moral action.
And in that, Teach for America, which led you to Arkansas. Tell us a bit about the town where you were had to make your new home.
Yeah, so, you know, I spoke just now about moral action, but I think talking is very different from doing. You become humbled. You become aware that you don't know that much about the world. And that's how I felt when I went to Helena, Arkansas. It sits on the Mississippi River. It's right on the border of Arkansas and Mississippi. And it's really beautiful in a way that is a little unlike anything I'd experienced in Western Michigan. There was the Mississippi River. There were nearby large, gorgeous acres of forests. And yet the town itself was very poor. It had its heyday in the 1950s, but like a lot of rural towns in the South, when one factory closes down, the whole town just empties overnight. So the middle class, both Black and white, fled in the 1980s. And by this time, the legacy of race was still very real. The thing that most surprised me is that in 1969, when the federal government was seeking to desegregate all of the South, in Helena, like all across the rural South, private white academies were created to avoid integration. And so you have this tiny town. Helena had a population of 7,000. The west part of Helena had another population of 7,000 with very few high school graduates. And yet the white and Black students grew up rarely interacting.
And there you were, assigned to an alternative school named Stars with kids that had pretty well washed out elsewhere. And in that class was Patrick. And this is the 15-year-old that kind of led you to break that kind of rule about teachers not having favorites.
Absolutely. You're not supposed to have favorites. But Patrick was a student that you wanted to fight for. He was very kind to other students. He never bullied them. He seemed wise beyond his years, like he had seen a lot of things in his life. And he loved to read. It wasn't hard to motivate him to read. My favorite part of teaching was silent reading, which makes it sound like I didn't like to teach, but it's because during a class where everybody is quiet and reading, you can sense this kind of energy and this thirst for silence and for a quiet place that I think every person wants. And I think I grew up in Kalamazoo, which was a wonderful place to grow up. And I really took for granted the idea of having a quiet place to lose oneself and to read. And that is a luxury to have. In my class, Patrick really thrived during these moments that required meditation and some appreciation for words and for poetry.
Would you read us an excerpt from your book, Michelle? This is when you first noticed Patrick in your class.
I would love to. Patrick had been in my class since the beginning of the year, but he was quiet, and it was easy to miss quiet students. He always chose a seat in the back and kept his head low. His voice was low, too. "Patrick, could you speak up?" I often heard myself saying, at which he smiled slightly, as if I had said something funny. He seemed at once distracted and alert. His eyes searched the walls of the room, seeking a place to settle. A couple of times, from his seat, he reached his arm out to touch a nearby bookshelf, knocking on it softly to see what it sounded like. And he was empathetic. Once a student slapped another lightly on the back of the head. Patrick winced and looked away, as if he'd been slapped himself. By my second year teaching, I had started to regard students in a utilitarian way. Who would respond with enormous success to just a little adult interest? Few students answered that question better than Patrick. He wanted to try. He was thirsty for encouragement, yet he had failing grades. Patrick could excel if somebody was there to push him every minute, but he kept missing classes. Now I knew why he had been set to stars. He simply did not come to school.
That's Michelle Kuo reading from her new book, Reading with Patrick, a teacher, a student, and a life-changing friendship. So how did you get him to start coming to school?
That part actually was the easiest part of the whole journey. I was crazy. I mean, I was 22. You know, I was naive in a lot of ways. I just drove to his house, showed up, and said, why didn't you come to school? And that was enough to get him to come for a few weeks to fuel him, just the idea that somebody was keeping him accountable. I don't think truancy is that easy in general to attack, but I do think that we shouldn't also understate how important it is for kids to have adults who push them and encourage them and take an interest in them.
He did bloom in your classroom. He was beginning to write, and he lit up with a lot of different books. But you did leave Helena to go to law school, and that was something that was a decision that really tore you up. It's very clear in your book.
Absolutely. So at the end of my second year, I was trying to figure out what to do. And I should say that outsiders who come in to Helena, most of them leave. But it's also true, and this is what's really devastating about rural areas, that their most talented and educated students also leave and don't come back because there aren't jobs. But I myself left, and I went in feeling so pleased with myself for really being engaged with the world, and I left recognizing that I had fallen short of my convictions and that I was fallible like everybody else.
And then as you go through your law school journey, and then you learn Patrick is in jail, there was a fight, and out came a knife, and a man was left dead.
Yes. And I was devastated to hear about that. I thought there had to be a mistake because Patrick hadn't been violent in my class. And I think anybody who's grown up in a poor neighborhood understands that this is just what happens, that it could happen to anybody, that it's you have to defend yourself. You can't overreact. If you call the police, they might get you in even greater trouble or misinterpret what happened. None of that is to excuse or justify what Patrick did, but that was something that I had to come to learn as well myself as a person with more privilege than people who have grown up in those situations.
And as we see in your book, Reading with Patrick, we really do get a sense of what it is like to be poor, to be in the criminal justice system. He sat in jail waiting and waiting and waiting for a trial date. And even though you were about to start your career as a lawyer in San Francisco, you backed out of that for a 7-month span to go back there and sit at that Phillips County jail reading with Patrick, writing with Patrick. And what a gamble for both of you.
Yeah, it was strange. I had no idea what was going to happen. I thought I could help him with his legal case, even though I was newly minted as a graduate. But I didn't know what was going to happen, and he didn't know what was going to happen either. All I knew was that he was really alone, and that in our lives, when we feel alone, a person showing up does matter. Whether that person can change our lives is a whole different question, but that must be worth something. So I started to visit him in jail, first just once a week, and then pretty soon every day, to read and write with him.
What do you hope people will get and begin to think about from reading your book and getting to see the connection you built with Patrick?
I hope people will really think about the kinds of connections and relationships we have in our lives, whether we are trying to form relationships and connections beyond our comfort zone with people who are from different backgrounds, whether geographically or racially or with religious backgrounds, right? Patrick is extremely religious and I'm not. And that was really eye-opening to me. I mean, the book makes it clear we have a really unequal relationship. I try to really wrestle with that. But I think that is what we ultimately hope for in our society. Things are so polarized now politically, and it's really easy to get into shouting matches, but it's much harder to just attempt to make connections and fail at them. I think that there's a more humble language that I try to provide here. Even as progressive as I am, I don't want to present myself as having any answers. I want there to be this constant sense of searching for a language that can connect all people.
Well, we wish him well. Anyone who reads this book will wind up caring about Patrick the way you do. Michelle will be doing a reading at Book Bug in Kalamazoo tonight at 6 p.m. and then this Thursday, August 3rd at Literati in Ann Arbor. That's at 7 p.m. The book is Reading with Patrick, a teacher, a student, and a life-changing friendship. Michelle Kuo, it's been wonderful to have you with us on Stateside. Thank you so very much.
Thank you so much. It's such an honor.